400% of base magic for Mentha at this point. So how far did you guys get?
Middle of the base.
Okay. All right, so let's pick up from the bottom of the name of base.
Are you using discussions on bones?
Yes, indeed. Shalom. Okay, so to note a few more points from the bottom of Heim Beis. So first of all, there is an interesting machlokas Rashi and Tosfos about what it means when Abba Binyamin says here in the bottom of Heim Beis that there are a few things that he was proud of, that he was mitztayer all the time to make sure he could accomplish. Al shnei dvarim ha'isim mitztayer kol yamai, the things that I exerted myself, that I troubled myself to make sure that I could do. Al tfilasi shetehei lefnei mitasi. So what does that mean? Tfilasi shetehei lefnei mitasi. So the Gemara explains, samoch l'mitasi. That means that he didn't do anything before tfila. So Rashi explains, what does that mean? Kol yamai nizharti shlo lasos melacha. And here Rashi has a big chiddush. So what does he add here? Not only that he didn't do work, but also the sholasot b'torah kishamadati mimutasi ad she'akra kriyashma v'yaspalo. So this is a big chumrah here, this view of Rashi, that before davening, not only did he not involve himself in his basic activities, but he also wouldn't be involved in Torah even. So is that actually the din? So if you look at Tosfos, so Tosfos disagrees with this. And Tosfos doesn't think that's the case. He says, well, yadati menale. I don't know where he gets this from. Aval raya deshari lomod kodem. And there's a proof that you're allowed to learn before davening. Delekaman perik sheni, the beginning of the second parak. The Gemara says, the Rav makdim lashi yodei, mevarech amasni pirkei. That Rav would get up and wash his hands, and he would make Berachas HaTorah, and he would learn Bekari Kriyashma, Bechimatizman Kriyashma. That he would be learning, and then when the Man Kriyashma comes, he would interrupt for the Man Kriyashma. So there, you see that apparently he was learning before Kriyashma and Tefillah. Now, the Rush also asks on Rashi where he gets this from. And this raya is a little bit of a problematic raya because the explicit context of this source is that it was before the Zman, because it says that he interrupted the learning when the Zman came. So it's hard to know that that necessarily would also be true if the Zman had already started. But either way, the source for Rashi's position that this would apply even to a prohibition of learning, that's still questioned by the Rishonim. And Rabbeinu Yonah has a interesting chiluk that Rabbeinu Yonah also doesn't seem to agree with Rashi, but he says that even within Rashi's position that there be a prohibition of learning, he thinks that even according to Rashi, it wouldn't apply to Talmud Torah the Rabbin. But he says somebody's giving a public shiur, so that would be a different story. Basically, this is for two reasons. So it's first of all that if you're just doing your own activities, so you could be learning or davening, so okay, so then daven first and then come back and learn afterwards. But if you have the Rabbin ready to learn with you, so you can't just say, let me daven first and the Rabbin will learn with you afterwards, they may not be available later. And there's a big schus to Talmud Torah, the Rabbin. And that will also help you protect you and hopefully not miss davening. So for those two reasons, the calculation is different. And he assumes that the issue wouldn't be the same. So that's even assuming one is worried for Rashi's position. Okay. So that's one har over here. Another har over here is that the Gemara also mentions that when one is davening, shlo yehei davar chotzeis beino lebein hakir. that there shouldn't be anything interrupting between himself and the wall. It should daven against the wall. They call the kosel minyan. So here, is that absolute? So there are often things that are physically in between a person and a wall, even in the shul. So I see Tosfos here has the comment of Al Milsa de Kviya Kigon Aron Viteva Einze Hafsik of Al Mita Nirish Einze Kavua. So something that is set there in the room, like the Aron or the Teva, so that doesn't seem to be a problem, but a bed, that would be a problem. So later Svarim point out that when the Rishonim talks about a bed, it doesn't necessarily mean the same kind of bed that we have, which doesn't tend to move, that they used to have movable beds that were really for sitting more than for sleeping. So that may not necessarily be the same kind of bed as we have as Bisman Hazeh. That's somewhat of a discussion. But there is an interesting machlokes that goes to the core of things between the Taz and the Magen Avraham, that the Taz writes that shtender isn't a problem because the shtender is Litzarach HaTfila. And the Magen Avraham says that's not a thing, that Litzarach HaTfila doesn't seem to be a justification. How do you know? Because look at this Tosfos. Right, what does Tosfos say? That look at the Teva. Right? So how do you medayek, Jordan? You have a seem to
if it was Tzarech L'Tfila, then the Teva wouldn't be a question.
I mean, you wouldn't have to answer it by saying it's Kvuin. Right, exactly. Right. So the fact that they have to give a different answer as to why the Teva is there, so that seems to indicate that the Tzarech L'Tfila is not a good enough answer. So the Magen Avraham doesn't actually seem sure in the end what exactly the issue is, but this is something the Achronim also talk about, and Soloveitcher talked about in the Shirim, the Inayim L'Mishpat talks about, Shirim Mitzvah of Halacha talks about. So what seems to be the question here is, what is the issue? Is the issue that it's distracting? In which case, something that is Litzarach HaTfila should be okay? Or is the issue that is Doma to a Korban? And in that case, we don't want to have a chatzitza because of the comparison to a korban. So that's when you start getting into things like that, which is batel to the wall, that which is kavua, etc. Start talking about measurements. So that seems to be the issue here. I think it seems to be reasonable to say, just to look at the minhag ha'olam, that it's more about distraction. And that's why certainly the Minhag HaOlam has been like the Taz on this, that things such as shtenders and the like seem to certainly be well accepted in the Olam HaYeshivas and elsewhere. And I think that seems to be the attitude, that it's about distraction rather than about being done with Karban. And that seems to be the way it's related to. So to move here on to Davav, so first we won't spend a lot of time on the Shadim Sugiz. This is an issue which was part of the dispute between the rationalists and the super-rationalists. The Rambam has his statements about this in his Ma'ariv Vuchim and in his commentary to the Mishnayos in the fourth parak of Avodah Zarah. Heard in the name of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik that he understood that the Shadim were actually references to germs, you know, to microscopic creatures that can end up impacting our lives and we don't see them. So certainly post-COVID we have a particular appreciation for the power of things like that. The Gemara also here has a statement about Ein tefila shel adam nishmas ela bebeis haknesses shenamar lishmo larina vela tefila b'makom rina shom tehei tefila. So here, this idea of a special quality for a Beis HaKnesses, so this is interesting because the Kesef Mishnah writes on Hilchos Tefillah that this is about the location. So this isn't a statement about Tefillah V'Tzibur, and this is true even when the minyan is not davening there. It's still the case that there is a special quality to the Beis HaKnesses. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah on Daf Dalet seems to take the opposite position, because there the Gemara focuses on Koach HaTzibur, and there the Gemara focuses on the time that the Tzibur is davening, even when you're not with them. So essentially, if you take those parts, so here it sounds like it's all about the location, even if they're not davening at that time. And in Avodah Zarah, it seems to focus on being synchronized in time with the Tzibur, even if you're not in the location where they daven. So which are you supposed to be more focused on? And there's language here that it's hard to know exactly what it means. So here we talk about Ein Tefilas Shel Adam Nishmas, and there Gemara Avodah Zarah talks about your tefillah not being nidches, being pushed away. So the Stipler has an essay where he goes through some possibilities as to what nitches would mean, not nitches, what does it mean to be nishmas and not nishmas. And it's difficult, it's hard, because he works through some possibilities, but some of them seem very difficult to imagine are the intention here, that not nishmas might mean that your tefillah is worth nothing, that it ends up as a chov to you. So that certainly seems very unlikely. So it's difficult, especially also the language is very hard to know objectively whether it means one way or the other. So, and we're going to see probably in the course of today a few lines in the Gemara that are problematic in that way. So just to try to talk about it just more abstractly, it seems that we have here two different milas, and one or the other brings various advantages to your tefillah. So the Beis HaKnesses brings advantages to the tefillah, that there is the locational mila and the dedication of the makom that is going to supplement the tefillah a certain way, and that's true even if the tzibur is not there at the time. And there's also a koach to what the tzibur is doing, even if you were not present with them, and each one can contribute something. So that itself is an issue. And now here the Gemara talks about the ability to bring in the Shechina and various numbers that do that. Elokim mitzav adas kel, minayin la'asarish mispalan sheshechina imayim, shenamar elokim mitzav adas kel, minayin sheshlosha sheyoshim bedin, sheshechina imayim, shenamar bekav elokim yishbot, minayin shnayim sheyoshim leskim betar, sheshechina imayim, shenamar az nibberei Hashem, yishu yeyu, yakshif Hashem. So here, this idea that the Shekhinah is present with 10 and with 3, etc. So the Gemara says, so then if it's present with smaller numbers, so then you don't need to know the bigger numbers. So the Gemara says, so when it comes to 10, the Shekhinah is going to be there before they get there. And when it comes to 3, the Shekhinah only comes afterwards. So Gerna Sanaipschitz has a vort here that you're not supposed to sit in the presence of the Shechina. So for the Beis Din, the three have to be sitting. So if the Shechina was there before them, they wouldn't be able to sit. So they have to sit in order to be able to bring the Shechina. And the Gemara says also that the Chiddush of the three and special aspect of that is you might think that din is not Torah. Gemara says here, Kamashmalan, the din anami happy Torah. So that's relevant to what we mentioned on Purim about the bracha on din and the idea that you can make a bracha according to Yerushalmi, not Paskin like this, but according to Yerushalmi, that there's a concept of a bracha on din, even though it is a mitzvah that applies to Bnei Noach also. And some have this yesod, the Ramami Panu, others have this yesod, that there's no bracha on a mitzvah that applies to Bnei Noach also. So that is the case in general, but maybe as Ritzi Beis HaFrank discusses, that you see there's a fundamental difference in the nature of the mitzvah. So the Gemara says, din nami avitar, or that the din of Bnei Noach is about keeping the world functional, but the din of Yisrael has kedusha to it. It's a fundamentally different thing. So the idea that the Shechina is present when there is a minyan, and the idea that we need a minyan for Devarim Shebekedusha, there was an interesting machlokas between the Noda Behuda and others. Thank you. that the Noda Behuda wrote that the halacha that you need a minyan for Dvarim Shebekedusha, that is actually only true l'chadchila, which is an interesting chiddush. And he doesn't actually express there what he means by b'di'evet, because that would be an important question. He is taught his tshuva is in Eben Ezer. It's in Madura Tinyana and Simon and Vav in Eben Ezer. So he's talking about Berchus Eirusin. Berchus, actually Shavarach, talking about Shavarachas. So there, his question was, would you have to make, he's talking about a Seder Kedushin who made the brachos without a minyan, and he's talking about whether there would be a need to make the brachos again, the minyan afterwards. So he writes there that these halachos that require a minyan, b'di'eved, it's acceptable even without a minyan. Now, if that principle is correct, so he doesn't explore there, it would be interesting, what does that mean, b'di'eved? So there he's talking about actually b'di'eved, after it was done, is there a need to do it again? But would he ever mean that you could then do it under certain circumstances without a minyan? We say sometimes, shasad chak k'di'eved dami. So when would you declare that to be the situation? So he doesn't go into other applications there. But the premise for why he says that, if the Gemara says that you need a minyan for these things, so why is he saying that that's only l'chadchila? So the premise for that is the fact that we assume that if you start something with a minyan, but the minyan gets lost in the middle, and it's machlokas for shonim, whether you need to have just anybody or the majority of a minyan, but one way or another, if you have an incomplete minyan after you start, so you're allowed to finish what you're doing. So the Nadi Behuda says from there, oh, so you see, apparently the minyan is only l'chachila. So if that's the case, so then that's true throughout, and b'di'evet, if you do one of these things without a minyan, it's still acceptable. And the Shevet HaLevi, Rav Osner, and his Chuvas in Chelik Dalet and Siman Zayin, so he disagreed with this, and he said, you can't derive that from the fact that you can continue without a minyan. What that means is that the Shechina was there when you started, and b'di'evet, you can finish what you started as long as the Shechina was there at the beginning. But that doesn't mean that the whole thing can happen without it. Hi.
What does it mean, finish what you started? Like, if you're
a good question. Chakras,
can you finish, let's say, Chazar Sashatz, but then can you say Kaddish?
That's a good question. It depends what Kaddish also. So the answer would be yes, but depends which Kaddish. So the Kaddish, that's Kaddish Tiskavel for that, yes, but completely separate Kaddish, maybe not. So that's an important question, practically speaking. And it's relevant also to the larger point. So that's a part of what Rav Osner notes. He says that you see that it's about just finishing because that's the nature of the din, not that you don't really need a minyan in the first place. And it's nogeya to another question. It says, the Gemara says, as a klala to somebody who leaves the minyan of Ozvei Hashem Yichlu, and it says, what's the nature of that klala? Is the nature because you have caused the Shechina to leave? Or is it because you have reduced it? And he says, nafkamina there, the shaila that he's talking about, Rav Osner, is a situation actually which I deal with all the time. He says, let's say you need a minyan for your chakras minyan, and you want to ask somebody to help out, and he's afraid to help out because he knows he's got to leave at a certain time, he's got to go to work, he's got a car coming, whatever, and he doesn't want to be subject to a call if he has to leave, so he'd rather not come in the first place. So as you say, such a person is advised not to come, so he shouldn't be subject to a klala, or better, he should come and help with what he can help. So in that context of that tshuva, he talks about what the nature of the klala is, and that's relevant to his argument with another Behuda, that what does it mean to say you can continue without a minyan? It just means that really you'd need the Shechina in order to be able to have these Dvarim Shebekedusha, but it's just that the Shechina still does its work, even if somebody leaves once you've started. So he he seems to end the tshuva saying that it is still worth it for this person to come, and which is what I would imagine also, and certainly what I would advise him a little bit negay b'davar in the case because he want to get the minyan. But I assume that that's probably the advice, because presumably, if the choice is to enable the presence of the Shechina to some extent, or not to at all, because you're afraid you're going to have to compromise it by leaving because you have to leave, I would imagine that the more you can bring it about, the better, rather than sacrificing it completely because you're afraid you're going to have to leave. So I think that that's probably the intuitively preferable choice.
Would there be a difference between if you know you have to leave in the middle or if you might have to leave in the middle?
I don't know. I think that probably either way. That the point is that if the trade-off is that the chevra is not going to have a minion because you're afraid that that's what you're going to have to do, so then the cost-benefit seems intuitively clear that better to let there be as much of a minion as possible rather than say, I'm not going to risk it, and then they won't have a minion because of that. It seems like it's a bad trade-off. But especially because the nature of the klal is you're reducing the shechina, reducing the presence of the shechina, so then to say, well, we won't let them have the presence of the shechina at all because of that, so that would seem to be a bigger violation.
So that would apply to someone who would walk out before the minyan starts also, no?
Right, yeah, presumably, yeah. Yeah, you'd have to think so. Okay, so that's another point. So then the next line, the Gemara says that here, L'choshve Shmo, so that's the end of this pasuk here, V'az Nidbar Yirei Hashem. So, Chishev Adam Lasos Mitzvah V'nenas V'lo Asa Ma'la V'kasev Kilo Asa. So a person intends to do a mitzvah, and he's prevented, and he doesn't do it, so the Kasev considers it as if he did do it. So similar to what I said before about the mile of basic nessus about the tzibur and the tzibur about the basic nessus, so this is another case where you see some conflicting sources. And I can tell you what the conflicting sources say, but it's a little hard to work through them because they are going to end up having language that is similar and hard to objectively translate differently. So I'd rather just try to explain intuitively rather than try to argue that the sources necessarily are so easily distinguishable from each other. But essentially you have two conflicting ideas here, because here the Gemara says that if you try to do a mitzvah and you are prevented, so you are credited with a mitzvah. And elsewhere we find different kinds of indications, and that, for example, it's a discussion more in the Achronim, but we know that we do say that Ones Rachmona Patre, it's true, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu excuses you for what you're not able to do, but, you want to comment to that before
yes.
I finish? Yeah?
And there's a gra that says that an Ones by Mitzvah Seder HaRaisa, you get the full schar. I read that in a certain article.
Okay, so, but you see, it's a chakir in the Achronim, right? With Mr. Bengal and others, right? So the question is, so is that always true, or do we say that Ones only patters you, but not that you can necessarily get the full schar, that we don't say Ones commanda of it? So that's a discussion in the Achronim. Do we say that you actually are credited with the mitzvah, or just you're not liable for neglecting the mitzvah, but you are not necessarily credited as if you did it? So, for example, in the beginning of this week's parasha, we read about the Korban Olah, and that's machaper for bitul aseh, you know, the idea that something you didn't do. So the notion that you get the accomplishment of something that you're unable to do is not clearly the case. It could be just that you're not held responsible. And that's a question in general. The Gemara says in Sota that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted very much to go into Eretz Yisrael and prayed like crazy that he should be able to enter. And on an emotional level, we certainly understand what was going on there. So we don't really need much more of an explanation. But the Gemara feels like we need an explanation. So the Gemara says that Moshe wasn't looking to get the shawarma and the ragalach, but he wanted to go in to perform the mitzvah ha'tliyas baris. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, what, you only want to get the schar? I credit you as if you get the schar, which is a very baffling gemara from beginning to end, really. So what seems to emerge, probably is that you have two different types of schar mitzvah and of credit for mitzvah. And presumably what we mean is that there is a tzchus and a schar that comes for the effort, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu is not going to hold back the schar of anybody for their effort. So that is indeed credited to a person. But then there is also an inherent spiritual accomplishment that comes with certain mitzvos, so that you either get or you don't get, and that doesn't come just because you tried. Let's say, for example, yeshiva education. So somebody who desperately wants to get a yeshiva education but can't make it, doesn't reach the yeshiva, so he may not be held liable in Shemayim for not having yeshiva education, but he's not going to know Shas because of that. The spiritual mila that comes from the experience is a separate thing. So maybe under some circumstances, even that can be acquired in different ways. So Rashiv Karambiyavna, Golf Tchadisicha, about that Gemara, about the schar, which sounds so strange to say that Moshe is looking for the schar, and what happens to the whole idea of Al Tiyu Kavodim, Hamsham Shemesarav, Almanas the Kabel Pras. So he explains there's a difference between pras and schar. Pras is the prize. Schar is in the sense of schar mitzvah mitzvah. What that means is that the reward for a mitzvah is the next mitzvah, meaning the spiritual elevation you get from the mitzvah that prepares you to then take on the next mitzvah. So Moshe was looking for that spiritual elevation from the mitzvah Hatzlius Baaretz. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, don't worry, you have that spiritual elevation, you don't need this specifically. And that was something unique to Moshe Rabbeinu. So presumably, whatever tension we find between these sources is that this Gemara is saying that the effort that one puts towards the mitzvah will be credited to him, and Kadosh Baruch Hu is not going to hold back the schar for anyone just because he doesn't technically fulfill a mitzvah. But sometimes a mitzvah brings with it its own unique, spiritually elevating aspects. And to acquire those, you will have to actually do it. Itano?
If one gets the schar for effort, does that make him no longer chayav in the Korban Ola for the Beit HaLasei?
That's a good question. So Korban Ola is, in general, not a chayav. It's more of a voluntary to begin with. So the nature of the kapara is a little bit unclear. So it's a good question how exactly to break down what it is that you are being mechaper for. So that's an interesting chakira, what exactly it is that you're trying to fix. Whether it is, it would seem like it is the general lack of commitment that you're. So if I had to pick, I would say that it's. Know that somebody who did everything he could and didn't get the mitzvah is not really in the parsha of that particular kapara, but that's just speculative. So here then the Gemara continues to talk about a Kadosh Baruch Hu's tefillin, and also talks about the particular aspect that Gemara focuses specifically on the Jews' tefillin, and it says, "Ro kol ami haaretz kishem Hashem nikra alecha v'yaro mimecha," that all the nations of the world will see that your Shemayim is written on you and will learn from you. And what is that? That is tefillin shivurosh. So the idea that tefillin is not only by itself such an important mitzvah, but tefillin shivurosh is a important mitzvah. So is there something within the mitzvah of tefillin that is particularly holy of tefillin shabarosh? So there are some indications to that effect. Question about that?
I'm curious if you're not supposed to follow after your heart. You're supposed to follow after your mind, in terms of add values, in terms of
the symbolism you're saying. Yeah. That. So that could be. Rav Shechter has in one of his svarim a few rayas that there is a extra element to tefillin shabarosh specifically. First of all, there's the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, which talks about the poshi yisrael shavagufan, about a specific type of sinner that's particularly egregious. And the Gemara gives an example. It's a karkafta shleimarach tefillin. This is a head that doesn't have tefillin on it. So it notes that the language isn't an arm that doesn't have tefillin on it. So that specifically it's identifying tefillin shabarosh. and that the position of Rabbeinu Tam in our Masechta on the Samach and the Beis, there's a Tosfos there, there's a Machlokas, basically boils down to the Ashkenazi Rishonim versus the Sephardi Rishonim, that the Ashkenazi Rishonim, for the most part, roughly, make two brachos on tefillin. The Gemara talks about making two brachos on tefillin, Lohaniach and then Al Mitzvah's tefillin, first on the Shal Rosh, then on the Shal Yad, but it's Machlokas how to interpret that, and half the Rishonim, and basically the Sephardim for the most part, assume that Gemara to mean, based on the language of the Gemara, that the second bracha is only if there's a hefsek, and in the lechachila situations, it should only make the first bracha. But the view of Rabbeinu Tam, that you make the second bracha always, and that you make a bracha on specifically tefillin shavirosh, so that is because, why is there an additional bracha there? So that's because there is a elevation of Kedusha. That's how Rav Shechta discusses in his Sefer. What sounds like from Tosfos here in Brachos is that it has the four batim, so there's a higher focus there. That is the Ikra Mitzvah Tefillin. So there are a couple of indications in Shas and in Rishonim and elsewhere that the main fulfillment of Tefillin is in the Tefillin Shel Rosh. So this is one of them and a few other such indications. Okay, so let's look at the top of Vav and Mibbeis here. So the Gemara here on the top of Vav and Mibbeis says, "Amar Rav and Bar Avada, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Kol Aragil Lavo LeBeis Hakneses, V'lo Ba Yamecha Rekadosh Baruch Hu Mashal Ba Shenamar Mi Bachem Rei Hashem Shemei V'Chol Avdo V'Shaholach Hashechem Bein Nogulo." So Im Devar Mitzvah Halach Nogulo, Im Devar Rishus Halach Ein Nogulo. So then the Gemara goes on to talk here about Kol HaKoveya Malkom Tfilaso L'Kei Avram Be'Ezrael. Shemeis Omim Lo E'ana Ve'Chassid Mi'Talmida Shel Avram Avinu. So it's a Maila apparently to be Koveya Malkom Tfilaso, and then the Kadosh Baruch Hu asks after you when you die and says, where is this Anav, like Avram Avinu? So this idea of Kviyas Malkom Tfila, question about that?
Back on the tefillin point.
Yeah.
Isn't there an idea of if you have a shal yad, you put it on even without a shal grosh, but if you have a shal grosh, you don't put it on without a shal yad?
So then either one, they're not ma'akiv each other, the Mishnah says.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it's true that the Gemara says that kolzman shein ben enecha yushnayim, it's true, right? So then officially the Mishnah says that they're ma'akiv each other, but then there's a drasha from the pasuk that kolzman shein ben enecha yushnayim, that is true.
So yeah. Then if the Shal Grosh is the Iker, right, then we're going to go based on what the Mishnah says, and we're just going to not address that, the Drasha of the Gemara there.
So it could be that one is the Hachana for the other. That is the elevation. That's also how you remember the law, that as long as you have your windshield wipers on, you have to have your headlights on. It's called Man Shehem Ben Enecha Yushnayim. I thought maybe that was a double meaning. But in any event, so just back over here, so the idea of Kviyas Makom for Tefillah, so what does this mean to have a Kviyas Makom for Tefillah? So is this just a Makom in the basic, just you should choose a basic knesses or even a place within the basic knesses. So Rabbeinu Yonah writes over here that it means just the building, and that once you're inside the building, there's no specific peda to have a seat within the shul. But the Rush does say that there is a notion of having a place within the shul. And Shulchan Aruch does follow that view, that there is still within the shul a notion of a specific makom. But still, one would assume that as much as that is a maila, if one comes to shul and finds that there is a visitor that has occupied that seat, not knowing that it is your place, that the other values, such as not embarrassing somebody and being a gracious host and Tachnas Asarchim, would, together with other values, take priority over the maila that is associated with the makom kavua component. And this is a discussion Zilkut Zilberstein has in the Tshuvas printed at the back of Aleinu L'Shaveach and the other poskim in the RCA Siddur, the newer RCA Siddur. There's a section of Halacha and Berad Machavero that some guy wrote that's in the back. You can check. There's a discussion about this there also. And I think that that's pretty self-evident that all of those priorities come before this inyan of having your specific seat. Of course, also a part of being welcoming would also be to help the guests find a place that is open, but if they end up taking your seat, so then it should be clear that being welcoming and not hostile and embarrassing is a higher priority than having your kavua seat. It's interesting to note that in one sefer, Berachos of Shirasa, he quotes two explanations of the idea of makom kavua that have actually completely opposite interpretations of what the idea is. And the Gemara here that connects it to anivus and the attribute of Avraham Avinu, so these two interpretations basically see it in completely opposite ways. So one is from the Tzlach, from the Nodeh Behuda, that the Tzlach says the reason that there is anivus associated with the idea of makom tefillah is because you are not relying on your own zchus, you're looking to find additional zchus for the tefillah, so you're assuming that the makom has a zchus. Similar to what we saw in Amar Aleph, that there's a zchus to a makom that is designated and that has the history. So too, you're assuming there's a certain makom zchus, and you're not relying on your own merit, you're looking for that, so therefore that's itself an expression of modesty. But then he goes on to say, this sefer, he says, he wants to say it slightly differently, and I think it comes out the exact opposite. Then he says, it's the midah of Avraham Avinu, because we know that Avraham is contrasted with Bilam. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos contrasts Avraham with Bilam, that they're opposites. So we found that Bilam, in Parshas Balak, so when he doesn't get what he wants, he jumps around from place to place, because he assumes that the place must be the issue, and he'll go somewhere else, and that'll be more miserable. And it never occurs to him that maybe it's him, maybe his tefillah is simply inadequate. So the opposite midah is the midah of Avraham Avinu, and it's to assume that if your tefillahs aren't working, that it's something in you, and you have to work on your character and your kavana more. So you keep coming back, davka, to the same place, which is what we find with Avraham, coming back to the same place, because you're not blaming it on the place. It's your own tefillah that needs to be strengthened. And recognizing that is the anivus of Avraham Avinu. So essentially those two interpretations really are the exact opposite of each other. The Tzlach saying that it's davka, not looking to your own zchuyos, but recognizing the place will have the zchuyos for you. That is the exhibition of modesty here. And the second interpretation saying that recognizing that the place is not it, it's all about you, that's so interesting opposite takes on how this is connected to modesty, but okay, one way or another, that's that. The next line of the Gemara, I always thought was interesting just in terms of how it's phrased. Question about that? Yeah.
Well, would it be saying that maybe, we know that Avraham Avinu went throughout different places to Eretz Yisrael, but would the Gemara be saying that when he was in the different places that he went to, he had a specific makom where he would daven?
Could be, but I'm saying that either way, just how, what the quality is of having a place, those two interpretations are focusing on exact opposite ideas, which is just interesting. So here, I was just, the language of Gemara seems a little imprecise to this next line, because the Gemara here has the din that it's not proper to run on Shabbos, and nonetheless, it is proper when it's for a Dvar Mitzvah. So, L'olim Yaretz Adam Dvar Halacha V'afilu V'Shabbos. And Psiagasa literally means a large step. So, when you run, you take bigger steps. I remember, I once asked by Willig in Mar Shakoa if going up the stairs two steps at a time would be considered a Psiagasa. So he said, technically, yes, but he would go up to the base medrash for the two subsequent times, so it should be moving. So there you have it. But the language of the Gemara is a little hard to understand because there's different categories of what's prohibited on Shabbos. So a malacha wouldn't be permissible for a Dvar Mitzvah. It's only something which is not in the spirit of Shabbos or something that is the Dachol or a Tircha or something like that, that we would allow for a Dvar Mitzvah. So running is not a malacha. Running is the Dachol or is a Tircha. So that's why it's not proper for Shabbos. So when it's for a Dvar Mitzvah, that's why it's allowed. If this had been talking about a malacha, it wouldn't be allowed. So it's interesting, the language of Kamachal and Rabban and Shabbasah. So maybe it's not really a question, but you would have thought that language is more for a malacha, but I guess not. You know, it's just a minor observation. Hi.
Is this davka running, or is it like walking, like power walking or whatever? Because if my personal, like, average walking pace is just faster than other people, so to them,
right.
I'm
so
going,
presumably it is relative, would imagine. If that's the way you walk normally, then I would imagine that that's still called walking. Some people just have bigger strides. So this next line, the Gemara, is very fascinating for a lot of reasons. So here, there's a lot to darshan. Just mention in the next few minutes. So the Gemara has these lines about agra, about what you get rewarded for. And there's a lot of insight in these lines about what is the single metric by which you measure various things. And these are very fascinating insights. So just focus on some of them. So agra, the pirka, rata. So here we just talked about the idea of running to a shir. So that's where the Gemara picks up from. So they would have these gatherings for a drasha. So the schar for that is the eagerness to come and attend to it. And Amar Abaye agri the kala duchka, that to be willing to endure the crowds. For the Rashi says Shabbos lefnei haregel shakol nasafin l'shmo hilchos haregel. So to endure the crowds for that. So it's again very interesting things to focus on. Amarava agra the shmaisa svara, so that the main schar that comes from learning is the svara. And Rashi here says shu yoga v'tareach v'machashev l'havin taima shel davar, that a person works and tries to understand the yesod of the din. So here, you know, we've discussed in the past that the Gemara has in a few places later in Brachos and in Harius. Gemara poses the question about what is the main attribute that you need to look for in a Rosh Hashiva. You need to look for the Sinai or the Ochr Harim. So the Sinai is the one who knows the whole Torah, so it's named after Sinai, where the Torah was given. Or the Ochr Harim is the person who is so sharp in his Svara that he's able to uproot the mountains with his powerful logic. So Shachter likes to say over that in Europe, they would ask the question, how could it be an issue? How could it be a question? What wins, the Sinai or the Ochr Harim? Sinai is a mountain. The Ochr Harim uproots mountains, so clearly the Ochr Harim should win. The answer is that the Ochr Harim can't find the mountain. And if you don't have the basic knowledge where things are, then you're not going to be able to do anything. So, in general, the Gemara there seems to prefer the Sinai because everyone needs the basic ingredients. You can be the greatest cook in the world, but if you don't have ingredients, then you can't do anything. But there are some later Sfarim that say nowadays, meaning then-a-days, when we have incredible technology like the printing press, which make books available at just the price of a house. So now, who needs people who know things? Because in less than a week, you could look up a source. So maybe the whole world has changed. So then you would think, kal vachomer, now that we have databases and search engines and phones, maybe all the more so. But it's a dangerous perception because we become overly reliant on such things. And not only does that compromise memory, but it also leads one to the conclusion you don't even have to learn the sources in the first place because everything is so available at the push of a button. And just today, there's a headline that ChatGPT has led to studies indicating compromised abilities in memory and other mental abilities. So you should just be aware of the downsides of over-reliance on these technologies and the assumption that the skill set has fundamentally changed because of the emergence of some of these technologies is something we should be a little wary of. Yeah.
So can we see a lot of, like, maybe, considering we've discussed examples of people who may be senile but clearly have no authority to try to apply to her in certain aspects regarding the Tikkun finalities. Can we say that maybe it's dangerous to be senile without being an Ohr HaRim because you feel like you have all this ability and could do terrible things with it?
Well, hopefully not terrible things, but yes, you can definitely make mistakes if you're not basically competent in both. So you certainly have to be balanced. Each one of these lines is going to be important. So even though it's the one line in Gemara, but I don't know if we'll be able to finish today, so let's just do a little bit further. Maybe we'll do one more, and then we'll come back to the other two. Next day, tomorrow's parsha, we'll have to see how much we can do. But I wanted to do basically a daf a day here, but I think we're going to have to... There's not as much on daf Zayin as there is on this daf, but we got 3/4 of this daf done today. We'll have to do the rest of it the next day. But let's do one more of these agras, because there's a lot to say about the other agras here. So this next one is also quite crucial. So agra de Beitamia Shtikusa. So this one sounds very surprising. So what does this mean, agra de Beitamia Shtikusa? So literally, this translates to the schar of Beitamia is actually a Beis Avel. So the schar of the Beis Avel is calibrated to the silence. So what does that mean? That's very hard to understand because while in some traditions, the Taimani tradition specifically, Shiva house tends to be very silent, it's not the usual tradition, and our tradition in Ashkenaz circles is certainly that Nichum Aveilim is an active process of talking, and especially since we talk about Beit Hamya as the word here, and Rashi in Sanhedrin actually explains the language of Beit Hamya as Matimino Sol Bidvarim, that we use words in order to give sense and meaning to the situation. So using specifically the phrase here that is about talking, and then saying the schar is based on shtika, is a very interesting phrasing. Now, you could say it means that the schar comes from not saying the wrong thing, which maybe is indeed perhaps the priority. But if you look in the Maharsha over here, so the Maharsha connects this to a little-known din, an important din, but a din that most people aren't aware of, is a Gemara Moed Katan based on a pasuk in Iyov. It says that Ein Hamanachemim Rishayim Ledaber Ad Sheyiftach HaAvel Tchila. That when you go to a shiva house, the Menachemim are not supposed to speak until the Avel talks first. So most people aren't aware of this halacha, but it's a real din, and it's also one of the reasons why it's less than ideal, if it's possible to go in person, it's less than ideal to go up to make a shiva call on the phone, because you don't have the ability to have that same level of assessment here of letting the avel speak first. So that's actually an important din. So why is it that you're supposed to let the avel speak first? That's a question. And to say that here the Gemara is giving all these lists of what is the single determinant of how successful you are at a certain endeavor, and to say that that's the obscure halacha that people don't know about is the single determinant of how successful you are at Nichum Aveilin, seems pretty surprising. So I think what the pshat is that one of the explanations you could give to why that halacha is important, letting the avel speak first, is that it's important to appreciate that every nicham avelim is a unique experience that has to be tailored to the specific needs of the individual avel. And if you come to a shiva house and you have your preset speech that you give to every avel, and you just burst in and say that without any awareness or assessment of this individual avel, where he's at and what he needs to hear, it's not going to be successful. So it's important to first listen and to let the avel speak first, and then you can assess what does he need to hear and what is he looking for and what is his mindset at. And that is going to dictate how successful the experience is going to be. So when it says Agri de Beitami Ishtika, it means the silence before you start talking. So yes, the role of the Menachem is to say something that is well thought out and is calibrated to the needs of the Avel. And the only way he's going to be able to do that is if he listens first. So therefore, the Schar for the Beitamia is calibrated to the Shtika, is going to be in accordance with the silence that precedes the speech. And I think that is indeed a hugely important concept. So much to say about these other points also, so we'll have to continue that next time. But before that, we have the Hekeh Eschar for Mincha. So who will lead us?